time refreshing you, catching you up from Joshua part 1 to Joshua part 2. And Joshua part 1 was phenomenal. We saw them cross the raging Jordan at full peak. But they had to put their toe in the water. And it wouldn't part until they did. Oh, they were weak. There was no way they were going to part that thing. But if they would just get their feet wet, God was going to do something amazing. And he did. And once they were in the land, they saw the walls of Jericho tumble down. They saved Rahab, the call girl. They defeated Ai. And so it was an amazing semester of seeing them kind of get into the land, getting into their groove. And this semester, we're going to watch them do something else. And I would say what they're going to do is they're going to run toward the roar. That's what's going to happen this semester. It's interesting that Scripture differentiates between an old lion and a young lion. Now, I'm not telling you which one I think I am. But anyway, they're different. Three times it mentions that the young lion is over its prey. And in Psalm 17:12 it says, they are like lions eager to tear me apart, like young lions hiding and waiting their chance. Young lions. Well, a story comes from the African plains, the savannas, and I'm sure you may have heard this, but in case you haven't, you're going to get it. In the African plains, you know that it just teems with herds who are constantly walking and looking for food, whether it's gazelles or elephants or wildebeest. They're all in these herds walking across the plains. But there's somebody else in the plains, and that would be some lions who like to lay in wait, some predators. And they'll kind of wait in the tall grass until they can get a chance to catch their prey. In preparation for this, it is said that they, the pack, will send the older lions ahead. And they'll situate them on one side of the field. And that may be because they're weaker. Maybe they've lost some teeth. I don't know if they have gray hair or what. But so they're hiding, but they got a great roar, okay? And then the young lions go on the other side of the field. And they wait for some unsuspecting gazelles to get in between them. And right at that moment, when they're settled in, the old lions have one job, and that's to roar. And when that happens, the gazelles freak out. And the gazelles run from the roar because they don't want to be caught by whatever that terrifying sound is. Unfortunately for them, the young, mighty warriors are waiting on the other side of that field, and they're the hunters, and they're the ones that will get their prey. Now, the only hope really of their survival is to run toward the roar, because the older ones aren't going to do the fighting or the hunting, and they're slower, and they don't have teeth, and so they have to go against their instinct and run toward the roar. The old people used to tell the young ones, run toward the roar. When faced with great danger in the world, run towards the roaring. Go where you fear to go. For only there will you find safety and a way through the danger. Trouble that is faced when it first appears can be like the roar that awakens within you your deepest resources. And in times of trouble or tragedy, a person either steps more fully into who they are or slips into a diminished life characterized by fear and anxiety. And right now, you already kind of know if that's you. Look, you've named it, I've been afraid of it. Seriously. Because of my parents' divorce, this is, by the way, a core fear. My sister's a therapist with abused children. This is a core fear. I was afraid that no one would ever love me. You know, love me for me? Anybody? The kind of at night you think, they don't really love me. If I didn't make the dinner, if I didn't do the laundry, blah, 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 blah. It's not me. It's just what I do for them. that kind of becomes a core fear. Another fear I had is that no one would ever want to marry me or stick with me. And that was after my first boyfriend broke up with me. Right? That you're never going to find that counterpoint, that other person who's going to walk you through life. Eventually, they'll figure it out. Oh my gosh, I've been afraid of being a bad mother. Anybody out there? God gives you a child and then you're like, oh no, it's too late. I'm a bad mother material and I already have one. And you can't return them to the store. Now you're going to have to walk through life as the bad mother. And everybody's going, yep, she's a bad one. You know, your kids do something and they're like, yep, nope, she ain't handling that well. And so you just have these fears. Hey, look, I'm afraid that you won't like me. No, you come in and you do. You're afraid your small group won't like you. You're afraid you didn't have the right hairstyle or the right clothes or, I don't know, the right attitude, whatever it is. And so we come to something like this and we're afraid we won't be accepted. And those are all real fears. But I want to tell you that we need to learn to run toward the roar. We need to ignore the lion, the horrific sound, and run toward it. You want to know why? Everything you ever wanted is on the other side of fear. Amen. The children of Israel were in the wilderness. The promised land was in front of them. There was one thing that stopped them from entering the raging Jordan. Everything they wanted was on the other side of fear. Everything that God had promised for centuries was on the other side of fear. They had to run toward the roaring Jordan, if you will. And God opened it, and they walked through on dry land. Did you know that fear and love are mutually exclusive? So if one of your greatest needs is to be loved, then the surest way to not receive it is to be fearful. Because you'll act all weird. And then people are going, I don't know about that weird girl. She talks too much. And really, you're talking too much because you're afraid that they won't accept you. So you're just like, or, you know, that girl, she sits so quiet like a wallflower. I mean, I want to like her, but I can't get to know her. Fear and love are mutually exclusive. John 4:18. There is no fear in love. Wow. Let's just underline that and chew on that for a second. There is no fear in love. Is that your experience? Wow. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear because fear has torment. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. That unconditional love comes from God, where he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He is the real deal. He loves you with an everlasting love, and his perfect love casts out all fear. Wow. Now, this is true of last semester, that you need to be on the other side. Whatever you want is on the other side of your fear. But you need to understand that you can be your own best friend or your own worst enemy. Choose wisely. Usually, you in the equation is what kind of kinks things up. You can be your own worst enemy. I mean, seriously, ladies, is that something that resonates a little bit with you? You're your own worst enemy. Oh, free the mind, free from fear, and you will be a changed woman. Okay, so Joshua and the Israelites crossed into the promised land last semester, but this semester we see them as strangers in a strange land, and quite frankly, the natives are restless. They are not welcomed where they are. A coalition of kings, we'll find next week in chapter 10, conspire against Israel. And honestly, even all the things that Joshua has experienced so far, he's afraid. The walls of Jericho crumbled, but he's still afraid. We know this because in Joshua 10 verse 8, it says, "Do not fear them." Now, God's not going to say that if you're not feeling it. "Do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." Listen to this. "Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night." Now, does it sound like he ran into the roar? God said, "Don't be afraid," and he came on them suddenly. He made a forward attack and he marched all night to do it. Strength doesn't come from what you can do. Strength comes from overcoming the things you once thought you couldn't. I was raised by a positive thinking dad, and I'll tell you what, you can't tell him nothing, no, not any of those negative things. And you know what? Again, you're your own worst enemy. You're the one who sets the limits. You know what? I heard this saying once, what one man can do, another can do. Look, if one woman can run a marathon, you can run a marathon if that's what you want to do. Now, you're going to have to work for it, but you can do it. What one woman can do, another woman can do. Amen? How about what one woman, ladies, what one woman can do, another can do. You are not different. If one woman can be an entrepreneur, so can you, if that's what God's called you to do. What one woman can do, another can do. It's not impossible. It may take sacrifice, but it's not impossible. Look, God could have simply evacuated the Canaanites and left a welcome mat when they got on the other side, but he didn't. He could have sent his death angel, like the one in Egypt that killed the firstborn, and he could have just exterminated the Canaanites, but he didn't. And he could have put it in the hearts of the Canaanites to just pack up their bags and move to Mesopotamia. Maybe, you know, they just got this idea that they were going to be immigrants to another place. But they didn't. Henry Blackaby says, "He did not, and that's because God's primary concern was not giving his people the promised land. It was developing a relationship with the promise maker. The promised land was simply the means God used to establish a unique relationship of trust and obedience with his people. They learned dependence upon God when they lived in the midst of their enemies." You live in the midst of your enemies. It may be physical, it may be financial, it may be relational. But you will learn dependence upon God when you are in the midst of them. Now, the first time I heard "Run Toward the Roar," and I'm so glad Jen's here on the front row. Jen helps in Reload Love. She's been with me the whole way. And our first people group that we were going to share God's love with was in Burma, the Karen tribe. And so we were invited to get to the Karen tribe. However, to get to the Karen tribe, it takes 3 days of hiking over the river and through the woods and up and down hills. And so we realized we were not equal to this task. So we joined this health club. Well, I don't know what you want to call it. And it was called Training for Warriors. Does this look like a warrior? And so we show up to this thing, and we have this coach named Vicente, and he is an ex-Marine and an ex-SWAT. I don't know. We did these animal crawls that are horrific to this day. I cringe just thinking about doing those animal crawls. And we were doing hurricanes and burpees and you name it, planks and those ropes where you have to go like that. Anybody out there, have you done those stupid ropes? Okay, so pretty quickly we realized how not in shape we were. And the first week or so, I mean, you were always on the verge of vomiting. I'm not kidding. And so one day I really thought I was going to hurl. And I'm looking around the gym to find the easiest escape hatch. Like, where is there an exit that if I just make like I'm running down there, I just keep running and go out the door. And Vicente must have recognized this in me. And he said, go ahead, go vomit and get back in here and work out. I was like, how are you? I mean, I want to go to Burma. I want to climb the mountains, but I've got to vomit to get there. Maybe. So we did. We made it through the class. One day I was wiseacing and we were doing stuff. And so this routine we were doing, he comes over and he puts on a weighted vest on top of me, like, I don't know, 20, 30 pounds. And it was like, okay, never yap it up in class because he's just going to make it harder. But so that's where we heard it. It took us 2 days, and I'm going to say we had a boat and a tractor and maybe someone helped carry my pack. But we made it. I want to tell you about an amazing couple. Ann Hasseltine married America's first missionary, Adoniram Judson, on May 15, 1812. 2 weeks later, they got on a boat and set sail for Asia. And after landing in India, the locals and British ordered them to leave because they could not proselytize Hindus. Now, this couple, I'm thinking, yes, I can go home. Nope. Anne embraced Adoniram's call to a darker, more dangerous mission field in Burma, where missionaries risked brutal punishment like crucifixion, beheading, and having molten lead poured down their throats. All right, just think this would be like God calling you to Syria, where ISIS is. On the arduous journey, the Judsons lost their first child at sea. Adoniram refused to preach the gospel until he understood the language. And do you know, he studied the language for 2 to 3 years, 12 hours a day, to learn the language before he even preached. They did not receive their first post of mail from America for 2 years. And they're studying this language. And here, coot, woo. Anne was more fluent. She spoke the language more literately than her academic husband. And she befriended a viceroy in the Rangoon capital. And she was able to help illiterate women learn the language as well. And during this time, she lost her second child, who was 6 months old. It was on their fourth year that they had their first salvation. This man, Mong Shui Mong. And so they made a bamboo hut because that's how Burmese did it. You came and met in the bamboo hut. The first time they had a meeting, 14 people came. And on the fourth year, this man got saved. He was a 35-year-old timber worker from the hill tribes. From the Karen tribes. In 1820, Judson petitioned the emperor in hopes of asking them to allow missionaries to preach, and when those people who became proselytized or saved, to not have them killed. So when you preached there, if you became a Christian, it was a death sentence. And he went in and asked the king, bowed before him, and the king read a few lines of the tract and threw it on the ground. Turned him down. Armed police burst into their home, arresting Judson after this time, and imprisoned him in a jail they called Death House. Prisoners were crammed into a dark, putrid, rat-infested rooms. They had no prison rights. No one fed them, gave them a fresh clean of clothes. At night, they would jam these bamboo pieces through the roof, putting their handcuffs so that they were on the ground until morning. Anne perhaps the greater role model than even her husband had supreme courage, heedless to all the threats, being the only white Western woman in an anti-Christian monarchy, beset with raging fevers and nursing a tiny baby, she went from office to office, desperately trying to free him, and at night crept into prison to feed him. Eventually, this couple's work led to the Bible being translated in Burmese. They saw 18 converts after 12 years. They traveled all the way through Burma to the Karen area, where it took me a tractor and a boat and help to get there. And they started witnessing to these Karen people, and they continued. As a matter of fact, Adoniram Judson fought hard for the first American women missionaries to be able to be on the field. And it was those women missionaries who stayed with the Karen people and helped them build their first church. Sometimes it takes someone who's going to run toward the roar. I like this. I want to be like Anne. I want to inspire people. I want people to look at me and say, because of you, I didn't give up. Do you want to be that person? Because of you. My husband divorced me, but I watched you and I didn't give up. Because of you, you walked through illness and pain, but you did it with such grace and courage. Because of you, I didn't give up. Because of you, your prodigal son who is horrible on drugs, selling drugs, causing problems, but you stuck with it. And because of you, I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up. I want to run toward the roar. And oh, Anne's story makes me want to do that. Part two of Live Fearlessly moves into what we would consider the military campaigns of Israel and the division of the land to the tribes. So that's what we're going to move into. And Schofield writes in his commentary, the book illustrates the principle that the child of God will be involved in conflict and evil powers, even with Satan himself, if he earnestly undertakes to possess all that God has promised him. So the question becomes, ladies, do you possess your possessions? Do you have all that God has promised? Have you inherited your inheritance? Do you believe the promises are true for you? Because I say 2017 should be the year to possess your possessions. Because the Bible has hundreds of promises, and I haven't even tapped into all of them yet. Have you? No, I want to have the land conquered and divided. And like we will see with Caleb, when I'm old and gray, I come to Joshua and I say, give me this mountain. I want even more. Now, God's promises are plentiful. I can throw out a few of them. Peace. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, Isaiah says. Rest. Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, Matthew wrote. I like this promise. Whatever. If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask in prayer, Jesus said. Renewal. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. Okay, that's just five. Five. Some of you still working on that peace thing? Yes. Yes. Or the rest? Yes. Now, these promises are available to all Christians. Then why don't all Christians experience them? I can tell you why. Some of God's promises are conditional promises. They're kind of an if-then. It says, he will keep you in perfect peace if your mind is stayed on him. Come to me, all you who labor, I will give you rest. It's kind of like in James, draw near to me, God says, I will draw near to you. In other words, you come toward me, I'll come toward you. It's a reciprocal relationship. It is a partnership. There are some contingencies. And that's what we're going to see in Joshua. It's a paradox. God gave the Israelites the land, but they had to take it by military force. It was theirs. Victory was certain if they would run toward the roar. Adoniram Judson wrote this: "There is no success without sacrifice. If you succeed without sacrifice, it's because someone has sacrificed before you. If you sacrifice without success, it's because someone will succeed after you." When Skip and I arrived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, it wasn't like there weren't any other churches in town. But we met a group of people who said they had been praying for years for an expository teaching church with power to the laity, freedom in worship. And because those people prayed, I believe God brought forth the fruit. We just happened to be at the right place at the right time with righteous people praying. That's the truth. Now, during our winter break, Skip and I got to travel to Burma again. This time we went in the front door, not the back door. And in the front door, we traveled with Franklin Graham. And Franklin had the first ever outside evangelical crusade in this mostly Buddhist country. And that ought to get an applause. Because Adoniram Judson and the missionaries who came before him 200 years earlier paid a price. And that got to happen because someone broke the ground. Someone ran into the roar. Over 170,000 people attended and 7,000 gave their life to Christ. Never give up. Maybe you're just the first ripple in the pond. Never stop praying. Make the sacrifices and pray for the success. I know you guys have heard this, but I love it. Every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up and knows it must outrun the fastest lion. But every morning in Africa, a lion wakes up and knows it must run faster than the slowest gazelle, or it will starve. It doesn't matter whether you're a lion or gazelle. When the sun gets up, you'd better be running. Oh, Christian, we need to run the race with endurance. Hebrews 12:1, let us strip aside every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily hinders our progress. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eye on Jesus, on whom our faith depends from start to finish. The truth is that lions and gazelles both run about 50 miles an hour. Those are the odds. Here's the good news. Lions are sprinters and gazelles are long-distance runners. So if you run long enough, the lion pulls back. Don't stop running, ladies. The other thing that's interesting in this lion-gazelle thing is the gazelles do those little zigzag things. You know how they're like jumping all over the place? It confuses the lions. They don't have that kind of spring. So they start running that way and they're like, whoa, wait. And so the lion is having to adjust differently. Just keep running. And if you're going to run, run toward the roar.